It's time for the Wisp Politics Book Club, celebrating Wisconsin authors and books about politics, government, and history.
Hi, everybody. I'm Jeff Mayers from WispPolitics.com and here with the Wisp Politics Book Club. Today, we're talking about a new book out from the University of Wisconsin Press called Power Without Constraint, the Post-9/11 Presidency and National Security. My guest today is the author, Chris Edelson. He's an assistant professor of government in the School of Public Affairs at American University and also a fellow with the Center for Congressional and Presidential Studies. He's also an author of another book, Emergency Presidential Power, From the Drafting of the Constitution to the War on... I don't know what the rest of the title is here. I'm sorry. I goofed up there. But anyway, welcome, Professor Edelson. How are you?
Oh, that's great. The end of the title is Terror. It's the War on Terror.
Okay. I guess I should have guessed that. But anyway,
no problem.
My printer screwed up. But anyway,
don't worry.
Welcome.
Thank you.
I'm a great you're in the mix of things in D.C. there. And so we're going to get to a little bit of what's going on currently. But let's just talk about your book about presidential power. Certainly, I think it's safe to say that presidential power always increases during times of crisis. And isn't that what happened here?
Pretty much. I mean, it doesn't – there are some counterexamples. James Buchanan, for instance, when he was president and the Civil War began, did not take any action. But most presidents do try to expand their power during crisis. And the question of whether they're successful or not depends for the most part on Congress, the courts, the press, executive branch lawyers and executive branch officials, and the people themselves. And we're seeing that play out right now, of course, with the Trump administration.
Okay. Your book focuses on the Bush, G.W. Bush years to the Obama years.
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of the reporting tended to say that Obama didn't really change all that much and, in fact, expanded certain things that the Bush administration was doing, like using drones to kill off terrorist leaders. What's your view on that?
Yes, in general, although there are some caveats that have to be included. So, for instance, the Bush administration's theory of presidential power was basically, we can do what we want regardless of what the law says, whether it's torture, whether it's warrantless surveillance, whether it's Guantanamo, whether it's military trials, whether it's using military force. The Obama administration and the Bush administration used that idea to justify even violating criminal laws. The Obama administration never did that. They never violated criminal laws. But they did claim very broad authority in areas, like you mentioned, using military force, the war against ISIS that was conducted without congressional approval. And I would argue, actually, their biggest mistake was failing to cleanly break with the Bush approach. When President Obama ran for office in 2007 and 2008, he, I think, quite rightly criticized the Bush administration for claiming power that was unrestrained by the Constitution, by statutes. He, as president, unfortunately, did not fully repudiate that. For instance, the Bush administration had authorized torture. Obama knew that was wrong and said it was wrong, but he didn't prosecute anyone for that. And so I think the lesson that future presidents take and that the current administration would take from that is we can do what we want, and we're probably going to be able to do it with impunity. And I think that's an unfortunate lesson.
So you're arguing for more congressional approval and restraint?
Yes, most centrally. I think Congress is best positioned to do this, but they're not the only ones. I think there's, as I mentioned, there are other actors, too. The courts can play a role. We've seen that recently in the context of the immigration executive order. People themselves, James Madison, the Federalist Papers, said that the people are the most important check on government power, and I think we've seen that recently, too. But I do think Congress is best positioned to act just because they have so many tools available to them, ranging from passing laws to holding hearings, investigating, things like that.
Okay, well, where would you, since you've written two books here, Power Without Constraint and Emergency Presidential Power, From the Drafting of the Constitution to the War on Terror, got it all there now. So,
yeah, you got it.
Yeah, so, but I mean, are we at a high point in presidential power in these in this sphere or somewhere in the middle over the history of the country?
In the post-9/11 environment, I think we were certainly toward the high end. Not unprecedented. There were presidents who took similar approaches. Truman, for instance, during the Korean War. Nixon, during the Watergate years and the years leading up to Watergate. What was different is those presidents had been rejected for the most part. I mean, Truman wasn't able to, for instance, take control of the steel industry under a theory that he had unrestrained power. Nixon, of course, was forced to resign. What was different about Bush and Obama is they were able to expand presidential power, as I said, pretty much with impunity. They were not really stopped. So, yeah,
what's the difference? What's the difference then? Why were they able to do it with without any restraint?
Because of terrorism, I think. I think when people are afraid, I remember after the 9/11 attacks, one member of Congress said, "Your civil liberties don't matter if you're dead," which I think is a pretty cynical way to look at things. But I think what he was conveying was the idea is that when people are afraid, they will put up a lot of infringements on liberty. And of course, we've seen that in the past too. For instance, the internment of Japanese Americans during World War II, the Cold War to an extent, provided for some of that too. But what's different about terrorism, I think, is that this perceived threat lasts for so long. You know, with World War II was a terrible war, but the United States was involved for 4 years. We've been involved in this war against terrorism for more than 15 years now. So I think that's made it easier for presidents to justify these things and to, in many cases, get away with it.
Okay, we're talking with Chris Edelson. He's an assistant professor of government at AU, and he is author of University of Wisconsin Press book, Power Without Constraint, the Post 9/11 Presidency and National Security. So let's turn to the current administration. It's not even 2 months old, and we've had a lot of national security news, mostly in the personnel department. Does it matter who your national security advisor is? Is it Flynn or McMaster? Does it really matter?
Oh, sure. I think it matters in a lot of ways. I mean, Flynn's unhinged. Flynn is somebody who believes and acts on conspiracy theories. He believed that there are signs on the Mexican border with the United States in Arabic pointing the way for terrorists to come into the United States. He said publicly that it's reasonable to be afraid of Islam, to be afraid of Muslims. These are dangerous things. These are things that ISIS can use as propaganda tools. He was somebody who was not trusted within the intelligence community, as best as I can tell. I'm not a part of it myself, but from reporting I read, when he was in the Obama administration, people who worked with him referred to things he did as Flynn facts, you know, things that he believed that just weren't true. So I think to replace him with somebody like McMaster, who's seen as a more reasonable person, and I think there's evidence that he is, he's not an ideologue, he's not a conspiracy theorist. I think that matters. At the very least, it matters symbolically.
Okay, so yes, McMaster is more of a scholarly general or a scholarly military man, and you know he's written a book on Vietnam and what went right and went wrong there. So
yeah,
he's an entirely different personality than Flynn. Let's just go down this road a little bit, though. So McMaster, apparently it was reported, told staff, you know, using the term radical Islamic terrorism is not a good idea. And this was sticking with what the Obama administration practiced, but certainly against what Trump used on the campaign trail and, I guess, in an address early in his term
just
here.
The other night, yeah.
Yeah. So what does that... What does that tell you about the power of this particular national security advisor?
We are living through such a bizarre situation. First and foremost, we have to say this is a question of whether a constitutional democracy will endure. We have Trump himself is an authoritarian. He's somebody who pretty clearly would like to rule without restraint on power. He called the press the enemy of the people, which is a term that authoritarian regimes have used before. During the French Revolution, it was used by the people involved in the Reign of Terror. It was a term that Khrushchev thought was going too far during communism. He's attacked the Intelligence Committee. He's attacked the press, as I said. He's attacked anyone who's opposed to him. The courts, he called the judge who ruled against him, a so-called judge. He's basically, the way Trump governs is he says, I'm going to do things. I'm going to do what I like, and I dare anyone to stop me. And that's a dangerous way to rule. So that makes me really concerned about what's going on with this administration. You have somebody who's seeking to exercise power in this way. And so the way that plays out, you have the person at the top who's seeking to rule without restraint. And then, as you said, you have people like McMaster or people like Secretary of Defense Mattis, who pretty clearly seem to have different views. And the question will be, how does that play out? I don't know yet. like someone like McMaster who says, hey, don't use the term radical Islamic terrorism, that plays into ISIS's propaganda. That allows, that you know, that makes people afraid, and it may make it easier for you to exercise power, but it's not actually useful. We're not fighting against Islam. We don't want to alienate our allies, but the guy at the top thinks differently. I don't know how that's going to be resolved. I guess it's too early to say so far.
Yeah, okay. You know, if we go back in not too distant history, you know, maybe the history that I can remember. So Henry Kissinger was a national security advisor before he became Secretary of State, and he was probably the most – he's the one who made the office, I think, what we think of it as today. And so, you know, there was a tug of war in that administration, but I don't think it's anything like the tug of war that appears to be going on in this administration inside the White House and with the agencies and the cabinet members themselves. Knowing what we know now, can you even project where the relationship between Trump and Congress on this national security question and the extent of presidential power will go?
Well, unfortunately, if I had to predict, I would say something that's pessimistic. But so far, you have this, and by the way, this is not a partisan issue. Whether you believe in limits on presidential power doesn't say whether you're Republican or Democrat. It just tells you whether you think constitutional democracy is a good idea. There are Republicans in Congress who are clearly very concerned about this. People like Senator John McCain, Senator Lindsey Graham, to some extent Senator Susan Collins from Maine, Senator Ben Sass from Nebraska, a few of them, Congressman Walter Jones from North Carolina, who they reject the idea of unlimited presidential power. They're not comfortable with it. They think it's dangerous. But so far, they have not taken any meaningful action. So as of now, if I had to predict, I'd say there's no reason other than hope to think that members of Congress, Republican members of Congress, will take action to set limits. We have to keep trying because I think that's the most effective way to limit presidential power. But so far, there's just not any evidence that they're going to do anything meaningful. But that may change. I mean, even in a slightly different context, in the last 24 hours with reporting about Attorney General Sessions not telling the truth to the Senate about contacts with the Russian ambassador. The reaction to that, I have seen Republicans today calling for Sessions to recuse himself, so maybe that shows they can demonstrate some independence, but the record so far has not been very encouraging.
Okay, well, we're at the end of our time here, but I want to thank you for joining the WIS Politics Book Club today. I've been talking with Chris Edelson. He's an assistant professor of government in the School of Public Affairs at American University in D.C., also a fellow with the Center for Congressional and Presidential Studies at AU. He's the author of Emergency Presidential Power, from the Drafting of the Constitution to the War on Terror. But we were here today to talk about his new book from the University of Wisconsin Press called Power Without Constraint, the Post-9/11 Presidency and National Security. Thank you, Professor Edelson.
Oh, thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.
The WIS Politics Book Club was brought to you by generous sponsors. See them in the archive of these podcasts at wispolitics.com.